You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Single Tracks Podcast. My name is Jeff, and today my guest is Claudio Calori. Claudio is a 7-time Swiss national champion and founder of Velo Solutions, a global network of professionals with profound knowledge in cycling, action sports, tourism, and urban development. He's also a popular YouTube personality, delivering entertaining course previews and ride-alongs with top athletes. Thanks for joining me, Claudio.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us, how did you get into downhill racing?
All right. Well, back in the days, I've been playing hockey.
Okay.
Basically,
pretty rough
daily.
Sport.
Yeah. And at some point, my parents asked me if it was okay to not drive me to hockey training every day, but buy me a mountain bike instead, so that I could go to hockey training myself without them having to drive me there.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously I said yes. The problem was not the real problem, but I had so much more fun on my mountain bike that soon after I quit playing hockey. And I started racing pretty soon, but that was cross country for a couple of years until during a training ride, I discovered a BMX track, which I've never seen before.
Uh-huh.
And so I did a couple of laps and had so much fun on it that for the following winter, I did nothing else but riding that BMX track.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And then the following season, obviously, everyone smoked me on the uphills, but I smoked them all back on the downhills.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of led me to then start racing downhill. That's where it then went off.
Yeah, very cool. So a lot of people know you from the videos that you post online. You've got a series of videos called Blah Blah Runs, and then you've also done a bunch of the course preview videos for Red Bull. My question has always been, like, how are you able to talk while you're riding that fast? Like, how do you concentrate, like, keep your words together? It seems like you're pretty poised.
Well, maybe I'm a natural big mouth. No, I don't know. You know, it started, the whole idea of those course previews actually started at Red Bull Crashed Ice, you know, those races on ice skates down an ice rink, basically, but not a rink, but a four-cross track built from ice. That's where the organizer asked me, hey, do you want to try that out for us? And it went pretty well. And then when Red Bull took over the coverage of the Mountain Bike World Cup, I asked him, hey, why don't we try this here?
Yeah.
And that was a success right from the start. People loved it. And then obviously I got more into it as well because people loved it so much. And then the more they loved it, I loved it. And I don't know if it's a special talent or what, but I did put in quite some work. I mean, when I walked the course, I did think of what I could say at this point.
Yeah.
But by now, I mean, when I go do the blah, blah runs, those are not prepared. That's just total freestyle.
Okay, cool. Well, does it ever mess you up? Like, do you think you could ride faster or better if you weren't trying to talk while you're riding?
At some point I was thinking, can I even ride anymore without talking?
Wow.
But no, you definitely do go slower, which is also what made it harder to follow these guys at the World Cup. Because I was still talking while trying to follow them. And yeah, you do ride slower when you talk.
Yeah. Well, of the riders and like the course previews you've done, before with these videos, like which ones were the most memorable, or who are like the really fun athletes to follow on the trail?
Good question. For some reason, I remember the one with Aaron Gwynn in Wyndham. Mm-hmm. Then I think I did one with Steve Pete and Rob Warner in Val di Sole, which was quite good fun.
Yeah. Are there certain riders who have like just a lot of more style than others, or were any a lot faster than you thought they would be?
Well, I mean, you know, I've done those course previews with them 10 years after my racing career. Mm-hmm. So obviously they were all super fast to me.
Yeah. Do you ask them to slow down? I certainly would. I'd be like, just slow down because you're going to get out of my shot.
Yeah, well, I did tell them, look, if you just pin it, you're going to be gone and you're not going to be on camera anymore. So you have to take it easy on me.
Yeah. Cool. So your company, Velo Solutions, has built World Cup downhill tracks. So how is designing and building a race trail different from building a trail for the public?
Well, that's fundamentally different. Mm-hmm. in all aspects, you know, like from how sustainable you have to build a track. Mm-hmm. Is it just for one weekend? Do you leave it as natural as possible and as gnarly as possible? Mm-hmm. In terms of construction, it's almost easier to build a World Cup track than to build a track that needs to cater for everyone.
Yeah.
And that needs to last for as long as possible with as little maintenance as possible. Mm-hmm. Whereas a World Cup, obviously, it needs to last for a week. And maybe then they use it after for a bike park. So it's a different story. But I mean, a World Cup track should have quite a lot of natural terrain in it. Mm-hmm. That means you basically just put two tapes and then you spice it up with some artificial features like jumps or whatever. But if you do too much to a World Cup track, they will call it a bike park, which is kind of a negative in World Cup racing.
Right. Yeah. Well, what feedback? I mean, do you get feedback from the athletes or the organizers when you build a track like that? And like, were the early ones, did people tell you they were too hard, too easy? Like, what did you kind of learn along the way after building some of these?
Well, you know, I think we have built one of the gnarliest ones there ever was in Champéry. Mm-hmm. This has become quite legendary. We had mainly positive feedback because it was so gnarly. Not sure if you'd want every track to be like that. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I like the faster and flowier tracks better. Like Mount Sedan was always my favorite. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's a good mix of flow, speed, and technical stuff. If it becomes that technical to where it's almost not rideable, then it's not really racing anymore to me. But that's personal preference.
Right.
That crazy one we did in Champéry, that wasn't really my choice building such a crazy track. It was just that the mountain was basically vertical. And when I got up there for the first time, I asked the organizer, hey, don't you want to find a different mountain? Because this is just insane. My dog wouldn't even walk down the hill. It was scared.
Wow.
And then he said, well, if you can't do it, I'll just find someone else to do it. I'm like, okay, well, I guess there's no choice. And so the challenge of that track was basically just to find a rideable line down that mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we, as I said, we spiced it up with some jumps in between wherever that was possible. Mm-hmm. And then the weather did its thing as well during the races. So
right,
we had those crazy moments with all those crazy stories, not only the one with Danny Hart becoming world champion. There was a lot more going on.
Yeah. For sure. Well, yeah, you mentioned too that a lot of these courses are built just for the race. A lot of times they just use them for that and then they're closed to the public. But I imagine a lot of mountain bikers, they want to ride those tracks. I mean, they see the top athletes doing them. They want to do it. Like, is it fun to ride one of those courses, or is it just all business?
No, it's definitely fun. I mean, most of them are. And if you can go as fast as in Mount Sinan, where you just have open spaces, where you keep your brakes open for as long as you possibly, it's scary, but it's so much fun.
Right. Yeah. I imagine you need speed. I mean, it's fun if you can do it fast, but if you don't have the right amount of speed, it's not going to be a lot of fun. You're really going to have to work.
Yeah. Some parts of those tracks, if you don't come in at speed, it's getting even gnarlier.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, today, your company, Velo Solutions, is known for building some of the most amazing pump tracks in the world. So what's so great about pump tracks?
Hard to explain. I guess you'll only feel it when you ride them.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because a lot of adult riders seem to avoid them. You know, like a lot of trail systems, they'll have a pump track kind of in the parking lot at the trailhead. And most of the adults that I see, I mean, they go right past it and jump onto the single track. Whereas it seems like pump track, like kids get it. Kids love pump tracks. So why do you think that is, that younger riders kind of understand it, but older riders maybe don't?
Well, if you go to a bike park, I would say most riders have a full suspension bike. Mm-hmm. And on a full suspension bike and knobbly big tires, a pump track is not that much fun.
Mm, right.
While as if you do come with a hardtail with the right tires for it that are pumped up really hard, then a pump track becomes a lot of fun. But as you say, if you come to a trail center, most adults are there with their full suspension trail bike, mm-hmm. and a pump track on a trail bike can be fun for a couple of laps, but this is not where you get the max out of it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, if you go to one of our pump tracks that's in the cities, which is most of them, that's where even the adults show up with their pump track bikes. So it's not just kids riding.
Hmm. Yeah. What is a pump track bike? I mean, would you ride a different bike? I mean, is it basically a dirt jumper or any hardtail?
Yeah,
or what's like an optimal bike? Dirt jumper?
Yeah, dirt jumper is the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a BMX, well, obviously.
Right. For BMX. Yeah. So that's what I was going to ask too, is where did pump tracks come from? Is it a BMX thing? Like what would you say was like the first pump track, or like who was an early adopter of these?
I think it was definitely the BMX guys who just had a little track in their backyard. Mm-hmm. I remember riding some in California with my friends. They just had a couple of bumps and mm-hmm. turns. And I really struggled because they were built so tight. Mm-hmm. And these guys were so good at it. But yeah, they were always lots of fun. Mm-hmm. And then they have obviously developed quite a lot over the last years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell us about your Pump Tracks for Peace program. What's that all about?
Yeah, Pump for Peace is basically, well, not basically, it is an organization that aims to facilitate the construction of our pump tracks in developing countries or conflict areas. Mm-hmm. The idea of it originated from a project that we had in Thailand, at the border of Cambodia, where we were building a pump track for quite a rich client, but right in front of a slum. Mm. And it was such a weird feeling building such an expensive infrastructure in front of that slum, where we saw all those kids that basically had nothing. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, what are we doing here? Who's going to use this? Is it just this rich client and his friends? Mm-hmm. Or is someone else going to use it as well? And, you know, as soon as we laid down the last wheelbarrow of asphalt, we had the answer, because all of these kids ran out of these little huts with whatever they had. Some had nothing and they just ran on the track barefoot. Some had a rim and they pushed this rim around the track. And then some had,
oh my goodness,
some rusty bikes with broken off pedals, barefoot on the axles. And they just didn't stop writing. They just kept on writing. We're like, whoa, okay. I guess it does not only work in Europe and USA, it works everywhere in the world. Mm. So that kind of inspired us to come up with Pump for Peace, which is basically just raising money to make it possible to go build in these kind of areas.
Mm. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I noticed during like the early years of the pandemic, in my community, some kids got together and built sort of a pump track, I mean, as best they could. And the place was just packed. I mean, before there, I didn't even know there were kids with bikes in the neighborhood, but they built this pump track. And it was clear that this was like something that the community needed and that kids really enjoyed. And yeah, for me, like pump tracks are pretty awesome because you can build them anywhere. They don't take up a lot of space. But yeah, kids are just all over them.
Yeah.
So one of the things that Velo Solutions is known for is building asphalt pump tracks. And some riders that I know seem to be against asphalt. They want like dirt, natural terrain. What's your take on that? Why use asphalt to build a pump track?
Well, I get the point. Mountain biking happens on dirt. That's what those people believe. And I agree. So then just don't see pump track as mountain biking, see it as pump tracking. And there we go. There's the solution.
Problem solved.
But, you know, when you build infrastructure for cities, they're not really into hiring a couple of people to maintain that infrastructure. So that's why a solid solution that does not have to be repaired after each rain or after each drought had to be there. And so that is one advantage of the asphalt is that once it's built and it hardly needs any maintenance.
Yeah. How much maintenance does a dirt track need? I guess a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, you ride one that's dirt and you're like, this is great, but how long does it stay great with before you have to do work to it?
Yeah, that depends on the dirt you get and what's available in the area. Mm. Obviously, there's some dirt that hardly needs any maintenance either, unless it completely dries out and then it falls apart. Mm-hmm. Or it rains and then it becomes muddy. Mm-hmm. If you don't want that, you could use some sort of gravel, which does not get muddy, but then you always have that gravel on top, which becomes slippery the more. Yeah. So, you know, that's why asphalt is a pretty good solution, because first of all, hardly any maintenance. Second of all, you ride it in any weather.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's dry or wet. You also don't have to wait for it to dry after the rain was there. Mm-hmm. And then not so interesting for a mountain biker, but for a city, is you use it not just with bikes, you use it with skateboards, inline skates, scooters, and so on. Whatever has wheels, we have wheelchairs on it as well. Mm. So, I mean, for like a hardcore mountain biker, these might be all negatives because he wants to be the only one using the pump track and he doesn't want to share it with so many other users. But at the same time, you could say if it wasn't for that, the cities would not be buying so many pump tracks and there would be a lot less pump tracks in the cities if they weren't so usable for other groups as well.
Mm, yeah. Well, when you go to a community to build a Velo Solutions pump track, how precise are the plans ahead of time? Like, do you know exactly how tall each jump or, you know, hill is going to be and how tight the radius is? Like, is it super precise or is there some like artistry involved once you get there and you kind of shape the track as you go?
Well, I do draw all the pump tracks with all the exact radiuses and all the heights of each roller and the distance from one roller to the next. But at the same time, I'm aware that once you're on site, there will be changes. You know, yeah. Maybe you dig in somewhere and there's a big rock or there's a gully. Is that the right word? Yeah.
Yeah.
That you haven't had on the plan before or no one's seen before. So there's always some adjustments. And that's where I just depend on a really good construction team. Mm-hmm. We really need to have a team that writes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We cannot just have some road construction guy because this guy would not know what to do if there's a change. But my team really must know how to react if there's a change.
Hmm. I mean, are they, when you're doing construction, are they out there with like laser levels and surveying equipment and like getting everything just right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I do give them the freedom that if it's an experienced team, I tell them, look, if my plan doesn't make sense to you and you have a better idea, I trust them that they can do something even better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know Velo Solutions also has like prefabricated pump tracks, but the asphalt ones that we're talking about, are those, is each one unique or do you have some that you'll use in more than one location?
No, actually out of the 750 tracks we've built, there's not one of the same. So all of them are unique.
Whoa. Wow.
And the prefab, actually we don't have them. We're just building custom. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So even those, because I thought I saw on your website that you do have some, where is it like precast? Is that what it is? Where you have like sections that you can bring in?
We just, whenever there's a request for those modular ones, we just hand them over to those who know what they're doing.
Okay.
It's not our business.
Gotcha.
But we do see that in some cases it makes more sense, you know, if someone wants a modular pump track for their schoolyard or something, then we just send them to the right people.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so we've talked a lot about pump tracks. What other sort of trail building and development services does Velo Solution offer to communities?
Well, you started with the racing. So we've actually just built the Olympic cross country track.
Oh, wow.
For this year.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a pretty exciting one. And then the World Cup and World Championships track in Crans-Montana, where the World Championships are going to be next year.
Uh-huh.
So also cross country.
What can you tell us about the Paris track? Well, before we move on, I mean, is it supposed to be like secret or like have they released photos of it? I haven't seen anything about it.
Well, it was one of the most complicated jobs ever, and you know, there was, it wasn't a full-on Velo Solutions design,
right?
And it was also not that we were allowed to build what we thought was good. So there were so many companies involved. There was a designer, then there was a French trail building company responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
But they, since somewhat they had the lead, they were not supposed to also build it. So they hired us to build it. And in between, there's road construction companies and all sorts of things. So huge mess. And there's still some works going on now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be good. But the details, I mean, the features in there were not designed by us. And we were also not allowed to bring in our ideas. So we just had to build whatever was planned.
Okay. But it seems like a cool course. Like, is it going to be pretty challenging?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
I actually haven't seen too much of it either. It was the French team and the Canadian team who did it. Our Canadian team is based in Mount St. Anne. So they are also the ones who built the Mount St. Anne downhill and cross country track.
Okay, cool. All right. So Velo Solutions does pump tracks, race courses. What other services do you offer?
Well, obviously we would build any trail. We're not like other Swiss trail building companies. We're not really into hiking trails.
Okay.
I guess we're too busy with pump tracks, so we don't expand into hiking trails.
Yeah.
My crew would love to get a bit more trail work. Mm-hmm. As you know, after the 20th pump track a year, you might be kind of tired of asphalt, so you want to go out on a mountain and be in nature for a bit. So that's why we keep trying to get some jobs building trails as well. And then well, what other services when it goes away from the actual trail building? We're also running the Pump Track World Championships.
Right.
And we're now just releasing an app.
Oh, cool.
That can take your lap times both on pump tracks and trails. Not based on GPS, because that would not be accurate enough. So we wanted something that is like basically race ready down to the millisecond.
Wow.
So once this is released, the users will be able to go on our pump tracks, get their lap times, and be listed on a ranking list on every pump track in that has the hardware installed. And we then want to bring this also to trails and bike parks.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes sense, especially on a pump track. You're right, like GPS is not going to be accurate enough because it is a very short distance. And so it makes a huge difference if it's off by 0.01 miles or whatever. So you'll actually have hardware at the pump track that helps improve that accuracy?
Wow, yeah.
Interesting. Cool, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we had to go that precise because we realized that the Pump Track World Championships, a lot of the times, the people are in the same hundredth of a second.
Right.
So that's why we sometimes the races are decided by just a millisecond.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned that you have over 700 unique pump tracks that your company has built. What are like the extremes? What's like the shortest one and what's the longest one?
Well, the shortest one was for a little kindergarten. That was basically two rollers and two turns, you know.
Wow.
And then the craziest, longest ones are currently in China. In China, the cities are just like, what's the biggest? So I want it bigger.
Wow. Cool. I mean, so how long is this? Like, if you were going at a decent speed, how long would it take you to do a lap on one of these big ones?
I think like a minute or so.
Oh, wow.
It's insane. Wow, yeah. It's, I doubt that there's a lot of people that do actually a full loop, full lap in one go.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, and that's the challenge too. I mean, again, you know, a lot of adults, they don't get pump tracks or understand it. But I mean, the idea, if I'm not mistaken, is that you ride around it without pedaling if you can, right? I mean, that's one of the challenges or one of the ways to ride one. And so one that long would be, that sounds tough.
Yeah. I mean, just getting around it without pedaling, once you have the hang of it, it's not really challenging. But what people don't realize is that it is exhausting.
Oh, yeah. It's an upper body workout.
Yeah, it's both, actually, the whole body workout. And if you're not used to riding pump tracks, even as a totally trained athlete, even as a downhill racer, if you go to a pump track and you're not used to it, it's so exhausting. And you think you're in good shape. You think that you've been training all year long, and then you go to a pump track and you're like completely out of breath.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So much fun. I mean, I love them, and yeah, I can't get enough of pump tracks for sure. So obviously Velo Solutions is a global company today and you've got projects all over the world. How do you manage such far-flung projects, and is it difficult, like, given that trail building and projects are different, there's different amounts of red tape all over the world, so how do you manage that?
Well, we never try to do it all alone, so basically we have teams in 25 countries, or actually more by now.
Wow.
Most of them have their own background in racing or riding or construction. If they don't have their background in construction, then we teach them from scratch. Mm-hmm. If they do have a bit of background, then basically we just need to teach them how to lay asphalt. And then, they know better how to handle all the admin stuff and all the red tape in their country. Mm. So right. It's totally up to them. We just support where we can. I do most of the designs myself. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to construction, we go help them until we know that they can hold the quality where we want it. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, they're free to do the construction on their own.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I know here where I live in Atlanta, Velo Solutions just did a project at a place called Allatoona Creek. So like, how big is your team in the US, for example? How many projects do you have going on at once? Or like, how many people are kind of dedicated to Velo Solutions here in the US?
I think in the US, we're somewhere between 30 and 40 people, or around 30. Yeah. This year, we're planning to build 30 pump tracks in the USA.
Oh, wow.
So far, there's around 100.
Hmm. Wow. So that's a big expansion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool. Is that like the maximum that you can do? Like, do you have a waiting list, or like, what's kind of the timeline where a community, they get the money, you know, they're ready to contract with Velo Solutions? Like, how long before you're able to get to a project?
Well, that usually I would say it's about a year between the first contact and the construction. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it goes quicker. The USA is quite booked, so I'm actually sending a couple of instructors to the USA now to teach the new teams, because we have two new teams that need to be brought up to speed so they can handle the amount of work.
Yeah.
It is always quite difficult to grow the construction team. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you cannot just, as I said before, you cannot just hire a landscaper or a road construction person. They might know how to lay asphalt, but they have no idea about the shapes.
Right.
Ideally, you have a rider that is also a road construction guy.
Yeah.
But so there's not so many of them. So we mostly take riders and then show them how to lay asphalt and do everything that needs to be done.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I imagine you have to do a lot of training of people, your trail builders. But I'm also hearing that there are programs at colleges here in the US. There's a couple at this point now, I think, that they do teach trail building. Do you see that? Is there like a need for more of that? Or are you starting to see some folks coming out of these programs who you're able to hire?
Well, I know they're there, but I don't think they teach asphalting.
Yeah, probably not pump tracks. But there, what's interesting is there are trails too. We're starting to see in like Arkansas. I know there's a couple of trails where these were actually trails in the woods where they put asphalt down or chip seal just to make it easier to maintain them. So it seems like it's something that's maybe becoming a little more common, but not so common.
Yeah. And I'm sure that those riders who said that they don't like pump tracks in asphalt, then
I don't want
to see what they say about the idea of laying and I'm not going to tell you who had that idea.
Well, I will say, yes, I've heard people say, oh, I don't like that, but for me, I love it because the trail is always going to be the right shape, you know? I mean, like, it rides well, it was built to ride a certain way, and it's always going to ride that way.
And you're not going to get dirty either.
Yeah, exactly. You can ride it when it's wet. I mean, there's a lot of, that's not to say we should, you know, pave all of our single track everywhere, but it makes a lot of sense in some cases.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell us, which Velo Solutions projects are you most proud of?
Well, you know, for me, I mainly just go to Pump for Peace projects.
Okay.
Now, mm-hmm. I'm hardly ever on any normal commercial project. I just go to the
You get to design them and you get to see the pictures afterward, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But then for me, it's, yeah, that, how should, what's the word for it? The most fulfilling experience is always at Pump for Peace. Yeah. Mm,
yeah, that's cool. Very cool. So I read about another project that you're working on called Velo Solutions Farm. What's the vision for that?
Oh, where did you see that?
I think it was an interview that you did maybe last year with someone and mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. That idea actually came up when I was in California for a couple of months trying to learn the guitar.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I really sucked at the guitar, so I went back to writing, which is obviously also very good in California. Mm-hmm. And I just realized how much land there still is and how it's not cheap. No, mm-hmm. I mean, not expensive. Yeah. And compared to Europe, I know that California can be super expensive, but depending where, you can get such big amounts of land, which, for example, in Switzerland is completely impossible. No matter how much money you have, there's none of that land available. It doesn't even matter if you're a billionaire. It's just simply impossible to buy that land. Huh. And so I saw that. I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool. So what if we created a place for our employees at Velo Solutions? That's just the initial thought. You know, my guys are all riders, and they don't get to ride anymore because all summer long they're building tracks. Mm-hmm. And that's like when on Friday night you're coming back home from a construction, you're completely tired, and then maybe Sunday night you have to leave already to go to the next one. Mm-hmm. So your weekend is basically just there to recover. So all summer long you don't get to do what you love, which is riding. So I thought, well, if we created this Velo Solutions farm as kind of a base for our employees, whoever wants to in winter, that's why California would be good, in our off season when there's no construction going on, they have a place to go if they want to, where they find, you know, good trails, maybe a pump track, maybe dirt jumps, healthy food, good accommodation, etc., etc. And that's where the concept started. And then obviously it developed further to where now I'm actually talking to the city where I live at, where we could place this as sort of a modern community center. Where people, so where it would not just be for Velo Solutions, it would be for anyone who wants to find good trails, good dirt jumps, maybe a pump track, healthy food. We're going to have a garden on it that serves for the restaurant that then uses the vegetable that it grows in its own garden, and then a little hotel, a co-working space, etc. It's even meditation area or yoga area, and so on and so on.
Yeah.
And the idea is that, first of all, the citizens of the city itself could use it. But since we're in an area that is a lot more sunny than the big cities in Switzerland, and the people that live in the big cities in Switzerland, they really get tired of the fog and the rain they have there.
Yeah.
And that's why they come up to the mountains to get more sun and maybe get good trails. And so the idea is that these people don't have to take a vacation. They could come here and use the farm, work at the co-working space, but then get to ride as well. And, you know, again, have the good trails, have the good food, somewhere nice to sleep, and it becomes a hub for all of cycling.
Yeah.
So that's what we're working on at the moment.
Yeah. It sounds like a pumped up you know, trail center like they have in the UK. And we're starting to see that here in the US too, but not to that level, right? Like, that's super cool. I would love to go to a co-working space where I could ride some trails on my lunch break, or even just hit up the pump track and eat lunch outside. That would be awesome.
Yeah, and have a ton of like-minded people around, you know.
Yeah. A biking co-working space. I love it. That's a great,
exactly.
That's a great idea. Well, Claudio, it sounds like you got some amazing projects that you're working on with the Olympic course and with your Velo Solutions Farm and Pump Tracks for Peace. Yeah, really cool to hear what you're working on. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
Well, you can find out more information about Velo Solutions and the services they offer at velosolutions.com. We'll have that link in the show notes. That's all I've got this week. Talk to you again next week.